the World's Yearling Sale. Make plans for the Keeneland September Yearling Sale, September 13th through the 24th. Visit theworldsyearlingsale.com to learn more.
Good morning. It is 9:40, Wednesday, September 22nd. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And today is one of my favorite days in New York City. It is the first day of fall, but it'll always be summer in this studio.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Don't know what to make of that. Anyways, hi, I'm Bill Finley, a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. And do you realize there are only 151 days till Fauner Park opens February 19th for his 2022 meet? I'm excited.
I actually did know that. Yes, I have a countdown on my calendar, Bill. Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And I want to thank Abby Gaudet for doing a very, very good job in my absence. And in unity and honor of her, I too am showing a 6-month baby bump.
John just eternally pregnant over there. But no, thank you to Gabby. She did a great job. And we appreciate her filling in, but he's back. The man, the myth, the legend, John Green back. And we're all in the studio, which you can see if you're watching. And you can probably hear if you're listening with the quality of the audio. We're excited. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland, home of the World's Yearling Sale. The Keeneland September Yearling Sale continues through this Friday, September 24th. There's been a lot of great action. We're glad to have John back to discuss it at more length. So it's been great. There's so much to talk about, a lot of really good storylines, and there's still a couple of days left if you want to get involved in the last book or two of Keeneland September. So we're excited about that. You can find out more and see the rest of the catalog at theworldsyearlingsale.com. We talked last week about what was going on last weekend. It was mainly Woodbine and the two-year-olds. And I think that's what that really is what carried the day, was the grade ones at Woodbine on Saturday and Sunday, as well as a couple breakout two-year-old performances, one filly in particular that we're going to get to. But to me, I think the story of the weekend, and really kind of the story of the year in terms of European trainers coming to America, is Charlie Appleby. And Charlie Appleby is dominating American racing like really no European trainer I've ever seen, at least this soon. You know, obviously Aidan O'Brien has this long, great history of winning big races in Europe and over here and in Australia. But Charlie Appleby, for a guy who's really only come onto the scene in a major way in the last 5 years, I've really never seen somebody be this dominant this soon across the board. He won 3 of the 4 grade ones over the weekend at Woodbine and the Jockey Club Derby at Belmont. So that's a pretty damn good weekend. This is after running 1-2 in the Just a Game and the Diana earlier this year with the same two fillies. He's going to be absolutely loaded for the Breeders' Cup, which is at Del Mar. Incidentally, his first Breeders' Cup win came at Del Mar 4 years ago in the 2017 filly and mare turf with Wuhada. He has now won grade ones or group ones in 7 different countries at just 46 years old. 7! And he's only been training for, what, 10, 15 years? I mean, he's for a guy who was really only taking center stage for the last 5 years ago. Oh, that's basically like a lifetime's worth of success. And, you know, obviously, like I said, Aidan O'Brien, he's still the GOAT in Europe because no one has been as dominant for him for as long. But Charlie Appleby is coming for that crown, man. And it's just, it's interesting to see that kind of new blood. It's always good to have new blood in the game, winning at the highest level. And he really has been one of the stories of the year. And I thought it was never more apparent than it was this past weekend at Woodbine and then a little bit at Belmont as well. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He was the story of the weekend and he's been one of the stories of the year. But just keep in mind, Joe, even though he is relatively new, he's not training for John Smith. He's training for Godolphin. Right. So, of course, that's where all the horses come from. But look at the overall numbers. He ran 5 horses over the weekend. 4 of them won. 3 were grade one winners. And the Jockey Club Derby will be a grade one come next year. And as you mentioned, the Just a Game and the Diana. So if you include the Jockey Club Derby, that's 6 grade one wins this year for him. And, you know, one thing I'm sure you guys have probably all noticed this, and this is something that O'Brien has done over the years as well. These wins, by and large, are coming with this, you know, 9th and 12th best horses. You know, he's got horses back in the barn that are superstars, and he's coming over with, you know, and no disrespect to any of these horses, but they are the second string. And look what they're doing now. So, you know, begs the question, if these horses are doing as well as they are, what's going to happen in the Breeders' Cup, not just with him, but with the European horses overall? Because, you know, we've seen the O'Briens, Aidan and Joseph, also come over and have a lot of success this year. But, yeah, I mean, it's quite a story. It doesn't look like it's going to end.
And I wish that we had talked about this a couple of weeks ago, because we actually had horses in every single one of the Woodbine grade ones. And basically it looked like our horse and a lot of the horses in the field were just tied to the inner rail, the way that Wild Beauty and Albahar won so impressively. And Wild Beauty, I remember we were going into that race with Diabolic, who was undefeated. And, you know, we had already put together our travel plans and figured out, you know, what we're going to do when we go to California. I mean, you know, you have this, you have Breeders' Cup dreams in your mind as you're going through it. And Wild Beauty came from off the pace. I mean, way off the pace, and ran by every single horse like we were all standing still. And it was just really, really impressive. When you look back at that filly in particular, I mean, she's a Frankel. So she's bred up, you know, she's a homebred of Godolphin. So she's bred, you know, very royally. Was in their program, you know, from the moment of conception. And, you know, that's a filly that won a stake race and was graded stakes place, but wasn't really, Bill, to your point, wasn't really the top, you know, 2-year-old filly in Europe, and came over here and just made us all look like, you know, we were second stringers. I mean, it was just absolutely astonishing. But I'm curious to see how the Godolphin horses continue to develop and grow and move on. But, you know, he's got, Charlie Appleby's got a handful of horses that are all on the doorstep of running in the Breeders' Cup this year.
Yeah. And, you know, like you guys are saying, that these aren't necessarily his top horses. You know, Walton Street got a 110 buyer winning the Canadian International. You don't see a lot of horses run figures like that going a mile and a half. And he was absolutely monstrous to watch in that race. He's a huge, huge horse. And he'd only won a Group 2. He'd only won a Group 2 overseas. He's a late developing type. He's a 7-year-old now. But the word was out. He was like a 3-5 or 4-5 favorite, that he was the horse to beat in there, whether or not he had that top European form. And he certainly did not disappoint. It was absolutely devastating. And like you said, if these are his B team, what's he going to bring for the Breeders' Cup? Like, people better watch out for the first string whenever he brings that over here, because he's doing pretty damn well with the side pieces, I would say,
right,
of his stable. And then you mentioned Wild Beauty as well. I know, I thought of the four, and this is obviously a good problem to have, of the four, I thought Albar was the least impressive, just he got a really perfect trip. The figure wasn't that big, obviously still looked good. But Wild Beauty, after breaking last, was just steadily moving up down the backstretch and just blew past those horses like they were standing still in the stretch. I think she's obviously got a very, very big future, like John said. She's very well bred as well. He's the story of the year to me in racing, and that, you know, that says something when you're a European trainer and you're really only running maybe a dozen or so horses, maybe 15, 20 horses maximum in the U.S. per year, and you're one of the top stories here in America. That says a lot about you and the training job you've done. And, you know, like I said, it's been a relatively short amount of time. He's only 46 years old, so I think he's, you know, a superstar in the making.
But Joe, isn't it great for the industry that he is going to be the story? I'm hoping he's going to be the story of 2021, and it's not going to be, you know, all the scandals that are going on, or all the lawsuits, or all the nonsense that's here in the States. I mean, it's like a breath of fresh air that you have somebody who's young and talented and humble and coming here and winning races. And I really hope that I'm not just being Pollyanna, and that, you know, everything is above board, and everything that I've heard about the guy is that he does it the right way. But man, it would just be great for racing if this was true, if he was really
John,
as good as he
that's
speaks.
That's not going to happen. He's not, I mean, he could win all, what is it, 13 Breeders' Cup races? 14, he could win all 14.
Right.
And he's not going to be the story of the year because of everything.
No, Max Player Horse of the Year is going to be the
exactly.
story of the year.
because of all the other things that have happened. I don't want to belabor that because, you know, we spend plenty of time on the woes of horse racing. But
and we will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the coming
other,
soon. Don't worry.
The other thing I want to say, you know, talking about the Europeans and the Breeders' Cup, who from the United States is like on the grass is you know, somebody say, wow, this horse is going to run great. Domestic spending.
That's basically
and then,
it.
What? Who? Yeah. I can't even name, like, you know, who are the other American horses that for the mile, the turf, the Filly and Mayor turf, you know, you have some horses that are out there, they're nice enough horses, but and even domestic spending is no superstar. Stranger things have happened, but I just see the Europeans taking, you know, every single person a check home to Europe as they possibly can out of the Breeders' Cup turf races.
Yeah.
We're hoping the coinage for the juvenile is going to be.
Is he going to go a mile and a half? against Elders?
He's not going to have to, but he'll go.
Maybe then I'll make him a rising star.
On the Friday, exactly. If he finally wins of going a mile and a half against all the first two-year-old they're running against all the horses.
Fine. Yeah. And have your rising star badge.
But yeah, we're hoping that he's the one. But if you look at even the last couple of years, I know we talked about it, you know, in November with the Breeders' Cup, and we talked about Mother Earth and some of the Euros that were coming over here. This isn't, the storyline is nothing new. Storyline of European horses coming here. You know, Chad Brown's been doing it for years, and it's that story isn't new. What's new is the players that are coming in, and what's new is, you know, now with Appleby and
well, resources. And especially, yeah, a guy who can rival Aidan O'Brien in that way, because there's been plenty of successful, you know, European trainers that have come over. Andre Fab is one I think of. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys that have come over and won, you know, the odd grade one or the Breeders' Cup race every now and then. But for a guy to be this dominant, you know, especially early in the year, like not just for the Breeders' Cup, the fact that he even brought the horses for the Just a Game and the Diana, those are not necessarily races that normally get a lot of European participation. For him to even bring the horses and then run 1-2 in both races, that tells you, I think, that his long-term strategy is to just raid every one of these giant grade ones if he's got the stock for it, and it seems like he does. You mentioned Coinage. You know, that's a little bit of a segue to the other story of the weekend, which was the two-year-olds, and mainly Hidden Connection. And we're going to talk to Brett Calhoun, the trainer, in a little bit. She won the Pocahontas just incredibly impressively over the weekend. She's a daughter of Connect, who's a first crop stallion over at Lane's End. And, you know, she got a great trip. You know, she was just stalking, Lemieux from second. And Lemieux, I don't think, probably doesn't want to go that far, I think.
No, you know, definitely not.
You know, I think her future is probably more sprinting. And so she got a good trip just stalking, a speed that was coming back. And just, but she, you know, she blew that horse, that field away, and then galloped out like a freight train, too. Like, that was incredibly impressive. And it got me thinking about, like, how many nice two-year-olds we've seen so far this year. And before I get to my point, I just wanted to mention the Iroquois as well, because, you know, I was kicking myself a little bit for not betting Major General at almost 5-1. I thought the Steve Asmussen horse was incredibly overbet in that race at even money. Like, that was a horse who did not really stand out on paper at all. I think it was just, I don't know, what was the hype of that was the horse that broke the record for Steve Asmussen, and then, you know, people got wrapped up in that. You know, obviously, still Stellar Top can be a very nice horse, but that was a big, big underlay. I want to just talk about Major General, because I like him in the Breeders' Cup. I liked him in his debut, and I liked him in this race. The figure was much lower than Hidden Connections. I think he got a 76. She got an 87. But this is the second time in two races that he's had to win multiple duels in the same race. If you go back and watch his debut, he went to the lead. He had to fight off three different challengers early in the race, top of the stretch, and then deep down the lane, he had to come back and win against kind of a perfect trip closer. This time he did it again. He had to win multiple duels. He had to put away the favorite and then had to hold off that late closer on the outside. And he did it from off the pace with a wide trip. So I think he's going to get lost on the board in the Breeders' Cup, and I'm interested in him. And to the point I was going to make, the reason he's going to get lost on the board is because there have been so many good two-year-old performances this year. You know, we didn't even really talk about this horse because Labor Day weekend was so busy, but Corniche, who was a rising star, he was one of four rising stars over Labor Day weekend. You know, he was just spectacular in breaking his maiden. He ran in 103 flat for 5 furlongs, which you really don't see at Del Mar, trained by Bob Baffert. He got a 98 buyer, which is the highest for a two-year-old this year. So I went back and I was looking at the top buyers for juveniles, and there have already been 9 90 plus buyer figures run by 8 different two-year-olds so far this year, and 23 85 plus buyers by 20 different two-year-olds. Coinage is one of them. And I don't have last year's numbers to compare that to, but that seems like a very, very high total for this early in the year to have this many two-year-olds running those big figures, and a lot of different ones too, you know, on turf, fillies, on dirt, sprinting, routing. So that was just something that I took from the weekend was Hidden Connection made me think of, you know, how many, you know, really dominant and really impressive two-year-old performances we've seen. I wonder if you guys have any thoughts about that or any of the other races from the weekend.
Yeah, and Joe, that's excellent information. And even to take it one step further, I didn't know we were going to have this conversation, but even to take it one step further, when Coinage, our horse, ran an 85 buyer in winning the With Anticipation at Saratoga, I look back and he would have, with an 85 buyer, he would have won three of the last four Breeders' Cup juvenile turf races. So he already had gotten to the point that we needed to. But to say that there's so many horses that have run faster than that, going, and it's only September.
Right.
You know, I mean, usually those numbers start hitting in October when you start getting, you know, the horses are a little bit more developed. The races, you know, step up a little bit in importance. And obviously the pool gets deeper as far as, you know, the better horses that start coming in these races. So that's blowing my mind that there are so many horses that are running those kind of numbers. I want to circle back to one in particular, though, because, again, we were in this race with Hidden Connection. And it was just, you know, that filly was so impressive on the racetrack and then just kept going, where you think that, that the mile 16th isn't going to be an issue, mile and eighth isn't going to be an issue for her going forward. And I have to say that this was a filly that had modest breeding, a connect out of an awesome, again, an older mare, was one of those horses that was modestly, you know, priced, was a $40,000 yearling and an $85,000 two-year-old. And just has been, you know, kind of under the radar because of a lot of reasons, but also because we're going to talk to Brett Calhoun, the trainer, coming up. And Brett's one of those guys that, you know, is kind of like an underrated trainer in my humble opinion. I mean, he takes horses that aren't expensive and usually they're golden senses, but he takes horses that aren't expensive and he wins and he battles, you know, at all these grade two and grade one races. And the owners, Black Type Thoroughbred and Hidden Brook Farm, and we do a lot of business with Hidden Brook Farm. These guys have a long history of being in the business. And, you know, if anyone knows Awesome Again, it's the guys from Hidden Brook, because they all worked for Adina, when Awesome Again was racing there and also was their top stallion. So, you know, they recognized that this filly had the athleticism and the chops to win races and win them, you know, going longer. And I just give, Dan Hall and Mark Roberts and Jack Brothers and the rest of the crew at Hidden Brook Farm a lot of credit, because they don't go out and buy a lot of racehorses, but they found her and bought her.
Yeah. And, like you said, this is a very impressive filly. And, you know, I can't wait for these Breeders' Cup juvenile races. I think they're just going to be absolute wars. And you never know. We still have a bunch of grade ones left as preps for the Breeders' Cup. We've got the Champagne. We've got the Frisette. We've got the Chandelier and the American Pharaoh at Santa Anita. So there's a lot of, you know, there could be more breakout performances to come. And you might be looking at a starting gate in the Breeders' Cup juvenile with eight or nine horses that have run 85, 90 plus buyers, which is just not usually the norm. You usually have like a handful of those horses in those races. So that is very exciting. And then obviously you can project it forward to next year as we start to turn the page, you know, in November and December towards the Kentucky Derby and the Oaks. That is very exciting and definitely a storyline to watch going forward.
Just one other point, and Joe, I not that I disagree with anything you just said, but keep in mind the recent history, or recent going back 20 years or so of the Kentucky Derby. The 2022 Kentucky Derby winner is more than likely a horse none of us have heard of at this point. That's just kind of the way it goes. You know, I did a stat a while back how Affirmed is the last hopeful winner to win the Kentucky Derby. So, you know, but with this much talent, maybe, you know, somebody will go from, you know, being a Saratoga Del Mar two-year-old to win the Kentucky Derby. It's absolutely possible. But, there's also a whole nother second and third wave that we know nothing about.
No, but I mean, that, I think that makes my point even more that think there are even more horses in the waiting, sure, in the wings, sure, that can be as impressive and dominant as what we've already seen so far. So yeah, it's going to be a free for all. It's going to be an all out war in the juvenile races at the Breeders' Cup. And then we can spin it forward after that. But yeah, super exciting. That's one of the storylines to watch going forward in the fall. As we mentioned, the Keeneland September sale still going on. We're going to get John's thoughts on it in a little bit. We're in the final book of the Keeneland September sale. Cumulative sales exceeded the total sales of last year's sale after the 6th of 11 sessions on Sunday. So basically just halfway through this year's sale, they had topped all the receipts from last year's sale, which is pretty impressive. Obviously, there were circumstances last year with COVID, but that's impressive regardless. Buyers, we can ask John about this in a little bit, but buyers are saying how hard it is to get a hold of a good horse. And the number of people that are still there, you know, towards the end of the second week, usually it filters out a bunch, but I think there's still a lot of participation on site. And once the sale ends on Friday, we'll be exactly 2 weeks from the start of the Keeneland Fall Meet, which we're all very excited about, as always. It's set to open with full seating capacity. We talked to Shannon Arvin about that last week, so knock on wood for that. 17-day fall meet offers a record $6 million in stakes purses, and the season kicks off October 8th through 10th with Fall Stars Weekend and 10 Breeders' Cup winning year-end races. So we're looking forward to all that and the rest of Keeneland September. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
Flexibility, convenience, opportunity. Find your digital advantage in the Keeneland Digital Sales Ring. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, visit KeenelandDigital.com to learn more.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Spendthrift Farms. Spendthrift's first crop sire, Bolt Duro, was well received at Keeneland, so the trend continues with him. He had two colts that brought $550,000 and $475,000. Very good for a first crop yearling sire. And first crop two-year-old sire Gormley had his 10th winner this week when Awesomely Shy broke her maiden on debut at Indiana Grand on Monday. She looked pretty good in there. Got away at, like, I think 12-1, which was, you know, a good price from a horse that was like 4 or 5 to 1 on the morning line. He also has High Oak, who we've spoken about before, who won the Saratoga Special earlier this summer for Bill Mott, and two other grade three place two-year-olds. So pretty good for your first runners. And it was announced last week that Basin, who is a son of Liam's Map, who won the 2019 grade one hopeful stakes, was runner up to Charlatan in the Arkansas Derby last year. He's retiring to Spendthrift for the 2022 breeding season. He's going to stand for a fee of $7,500. Very reasonable for a son of Liam's Matt, who is really starting to break out as a young, successful sire. And also, he's going to participate in the Share the Upside program, so you can get in on the ground floor with Basin. All right, so we didn't have John last week. It was excruciating not to have him. You know, every time John's away from me, it's I'm just counting the days till I get to see him again. But especially last week, because we had the Keeneland September sale really in full swing. You know, Gabby was obviously very knowledgeable, but John is a buyer down there, so I wanted to get his impressions. And last week, I talked about Justify. You know, Justify was the story of the first day or two of Keeneland September, which you would kind of expect as a Triple Crown winner, as a son of the late Scat Daddy. There's not going to be too many stallion sons of Scat Daddy, unfortunately, because he died so young. But I felt like as soon as I said that and the clock turned and Keeneland September went on that day, City of Light became the big time headliner. And he was a little bit more surprising as a huge story, because he was obviously very brilliant at multiple distances. He won the Pegasus, he won going 7 furlongs, a mile, grade one, multiple grade one winning son of Quality Roads. You expect him to be well received, but he had a $1.7 million horse. He had several other $1 million horses. I want to get your general impressions, John, from the sale and your experience last week, but also just a comment on City of Light and the way he just exploded with these high price yearlings.
Well, no doubt that City of Light was the flavor of the week down at Keeneland. People were talking about his yearlings. They were talking about him. A number of people that I spoke to have already tried to secure 2022 seasons for him. So he definitely is the hot freshman sire that people are anticipating. His falls are going to be, you know, big runners. He wasn't the only one. You know, Mendelsohn was also a big talk. And I know we liked a bunch of Mendelsohns and we're pleased that we could walk away with one. But we got outrun on a number of those. So they were talking about those. Obviously, the usual, you know, and West Coast also was a new sire that people were talking about and felt that he had some really good representatives, in the yearling sale. And then there were the usual suspects. You had the Intermischiefs, the Nyquist, Arrogates. Bernardini fillies were selling off the charts, again, because he's just such a good broodmare sire. And it was really a difficult overall. The tenor of the sale was you had to bring your big boy pants on and your deep pockets in order to get a yearling that you really liked. And I know from personal experience, you know, we had a number of people sending us short lists and giving us ideas of horses that, you know, to look at and to buy. And if I told you that we got outrun on six out of eight horses that we liked, and not just outrun, it wasn't like, oh, we were the underbidders. It was like we got out freaking run. I mean, yeah. The horses were selling for 2-3 times what we thought they should bring at the sales. And it was just a very festive feeling down there. And it wasn't great weather. It was hot a couple of days. It was storming down rain a couple of days. So it wasn't good for the people. But certainly if you had any kind of horse that looked the part and had a little bit of breeding and were relatively clean on the vet results, those horses were bringing money hand over fist. And, you know, we were fortunate enough. We bought 11 horses out of the sale.
Wow.
And stayed in our lane pretty much, you know, as to what we thought. It was frustrating, but it was, you know, it was a matter of just being diligent and doing your homework. But we also sold 9 horses out of the sale and didn't bring home one of them. So, you know, if you had a good horse, you had nothing to worry about. There were people that were willing to spend and buy, and it was a very festive mood. I listened to the show from last week, and I know Shannon said that they were doing things to improve the appearance of Keeneland, and I heard a lot of good things about, you know, little things like flowers, drinks, food services, you know, all those things that were gratis by Keeneland. And I think they made it a destination site again, which it had been kind of, you know, lacking over the past couple of years, primarily because of COVID.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was interesting to hear about, and, you know, kind of the energy on the ground that I think was similar to Saratoga, the way Saratoga felt with everybody being back there and all the big wigs there. And I think a lot of international participation as well was a big deal. I wanted to mention real quick that yesterday, the White House announced that the travel restrictions from 33 different countries into America are going to be unrestricted. It's going to clear the path, I think, for people to come to these major sales and to the Breeders' Cup. So I think that's a big factor as well in terms of the buying power that's at these sales. Like I said, it in the open, it passed its total gross receipts from last year on the sixth day. You know, that is super, super impressive and speaks to the appetite that there was for good yearlings. You know, I always wonder, you know, with the City of Light thing where it becomes this like self-perpetuating cyclone of hype where everyone's talking and everyone hears about the City of Light. So, well, you got to get a City of Light. You got to get a City of Light. And not to say that he's not going to be a great stallion. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of runners. But I just wonder if, you know, John can speak to this, but if there ever just becomes that, you know, hype machine that spins a little bit out of control and people get a little caught up in, oh, you have to get one by this stallion or that stallion. Do you ever see that?
Oh, there's no question about it. You know, Joe, and especially at the sales, you know, you think that the internet is the fastest, you know, way to get information, but it's not. It's the grapevine at Keeneland. It's sitting back there at the barns and well, what do you think? Oh, I saw a great Bolt d'Oro. And then, oh, well, I saw an even better Bolt d'Oro. Well, I need to have a Bolt d'Oro. And then it really starts to feed into itself. And you know, you mentioned City of Light. I can remember years ago, it was The Factor. And, you know, then it was Liam's Map. And then it was Run Happy a couple of years ago. And sometimes they make it big and they fulfill the promise and sometimes they don't. You know, it does. It really starts to build upon itself. And it almost becomes a game of telephone where, well, I saw a good one. Well, I saw two good ones. Well, I saw an outstanding one. Well, so-and-so, you know, said they were going to spend $300 for it and they got it for $150, you know, and all of a sudden it like blows up into this, you know, phenomenon. And then, you know, people quickly forget if the horse doesn't make it. But I really feel like that City of Light in particular, yeah, you keep bringing him up, is definitely a horse that should do well. And you know, we actually sold one, and we sold one for better than what I thought we were going to because of that hype and because he was a little bit, you know, further down in the book. And we kind of were fortunate that the game of telephone built up and there was a, you know, a pent up want for that kind of a horse.
Yeah. And like, you know, I said this last week when we were talking to Gabby, is that I think the Keeneland September's sales position on the calendar is greatly aided by Saratoga and Del Mar being right before it. You know, in the same way that we were talking at OBS April about how the proximity to the Derby mm-hmm. makes people think, you know, here's where I'm going to get my next Derby horse. It's so fresh in people's minds. I think that was the case this year too, with Saratoga being such a great meet with having so many dominant explosive performances, that I think that increased the appetite even more. And then with the return of the international buyers, and of course, John Green, you know, trying to bid on every horse that he sees, I think that added up to a very, like you said, festive environment and atmosphere at Keeneland. And, you know, the results speak for themselves. There were a ton of $1 million horses and, like, you know, still got a little bit of time left. If you know, good horse can come from anywhere, you know, even in the deeper books in the sale, you still got a couple of days to bid. So we'll be keeping tabs to see if there are any storylines left. But I think that City of Light and Justify were the story of week one. But like you said, there were other freshman sires that did well, also both Doro, Mendelson. I think there's a lot of appetite for this freshman class.
And Joe, there were, just to put a bow on this, there were 14 horses yesterday that sold for $250,000 or more. 14 on the second day of book four.
Yeah.
So you're a week and a half into the sale, and there's still, you know, a dozen or so horses that are selling for $250,000 or more. That's how strong the market
is. Yeah, and like every time I was monitoring the sale yesterday, and every time I looked up, it was a horse that was going for six figures, which doesn't tend to be the case later on in these sales.
That usually only happens when you bid.
Right. Well, $600,000 is my limit. So I was shut out on most horses in book one, but stay tuned. Owning potential future superstars like Flightline is attainable with a racing partnership with West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. This increases your racetrack action and your chances for a big horse. Learn more about why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships at westpointtb.com. So obviously there's a ton of action from West Point last week. Every time I looked up, West Point had the topper, or the co-topper, or the, you know, they really have been active at these sales, and I think the partnerships continue to grow because of that, because of these headlines that they're making. They purchased or are partners on two dozen yearlings from Keeneland September, including the current $1.7 million sale topper, who we mentioned is by City of Light, a colt by City of Light. They bought in partnership with Tallow Racing and Woodford Racing. The roster also includes sires Justify, Quality Road, Nyquist, and Gunrunner. And this is still a good opportunity for someone interested in dipping their toes into ownership, getting in on this yearlings class with West Point Thoroughbreds. Even if you don't want to get in on the 1.7 horse, there's plenty of other horses that you can get a part of. And, you know, the roster keeps expanding. And he also had a winner last Friday at Churchill Downs. Strong Silent won an allowance for Dale Romans to get her second straight win. So can't wait to see those yearlings on the track next year. They're certainly, you know, casting a wide net, and really you got a lot of buying power, I think, more than ever now. And they really flex their muscles. So we're excited for them. We're excited for all the partners, and there's still time to get involved in a lot of these yearlings. This was a huge, huge story last week. And, you know, in the past 2 weeks, honestly, that Tomas Mejia, who was a rider at Monmouth Park, he has been banned 10 years for using a battery or electrical shocking device when riding a horse named Stronger Than You Know to victory in a September 3rd allowance at Monmouth. You know, I don't necessarily know what the evidence is. There's a blurry Twitter photo. That's all that I've seen from it. But just assuming that's correct, I don't have a problem, honestly, with the penalty, because it is, you know, it's pretty shocking animal cruelty.
No pun intended.
And damn it. See, I'm trying to be serious here, John. This is a very serious discussion.
I'm sorry.
Now I can't stop thinking about that pun. It was stunning, I would say. That might be a pun too. Anyway, it's a very serious offense, John. All right? It's a very serious offense to shock a horse. We saw Roman Chapa get caught doing it a couple of times. Recently deceased Roman Chapa got banned 5 years when he was caught doing it. That photo was a little clearer. I don't have a problem with this necessarily, that they did, they took no mercy on him and they banned him, if indeed that they did have proof that he had this buzzer. It just, again, like, I feel like it's like the Linda Rice thing, where I'm not going to sit here and say that Linda Rice didn't deserve a 3-year suspension for what she did. But just when you compare it to the trainers that Monmouth Park has let run amok and never really, you know, suspended or even really fined to any meaningful capacity, like literally the day before the Tomas Mejia news came out, Monmouth Park sent out a press release celebrating Wayne Potts as their leading trainer and talking about the perseverance that he had COVID or something and overcame that to become Monmouth's leading trainer. That to me seems a little incongruous. Again, not arguing against the penalty that Tomas Mejia got. I think it's completely fair if indeed they proved that he was using a buzzer, but I think it just speaks to the two sets of rules where a lot of trainers get to just basically do whatever they want and get chance after chance after chance and even get celebrated by a place like Monmouth Park. You know, Dennis Drazen talked in the past about how Jorge Navarro and Jason Service were upstanding horsemen that they were glad to have at Monmouth Park. You can't celebrate a guy like Wayne Potts, who we said, and we're going to get to his latest suspension, which is probably like his 88th, or we're up to 88 now. You can't celebrate a guy like that winning your trading title and then turn around and be like, well, we have no tolerance for rule breaking over here, so we got to suspend this jockey 10 different years for 10 years. It's like, you can't have these different stipulations, these different punishments for different classes of people in racing. That's my feeling about it. Again, not arguing with the penalty. It just seems a little hypocritical.
Joe, I can't disagree on that. But, you know, it comes back, and I think you realize this or recognize this, it comes back to two wrongs don't make a right here. I mean, yeah, Wayne Potts, Jorge Navarro, Jason Service, all the things that have gone on at Monmouth over the years have been things that shouldn't have happened. We know that, and we would like to think that Monmouth, the stewards management, would be more vigilant when it comes to integrity issues and cracking down on things that seemed obvious to, you know, the average handicapper about what's going on there. But, you know, so that doesn't mean that they should say, okay, you know, we've been went easy on this guy and this guy, so we're going to give Mejia 1 year suspension. Matter of fact, I think that they should be, and this is the stewards, not the track management, I think that they should be celebrated, because this was the benchmark for this offense in the past was 5 years. And not only did they say 10, they recommended New Jersey Racing Commission that he's gone for life. Now, I suppose my guess is the stewards don't have the power to ban somebody from life for life. That's why they took 10. And I think the New Jersey Racing Commission will ban him for life. And I think they've set a new standard. If they do so, I think they've set a new standard in this industry that something like this is completely unacceptable. There'll be zero tolerance. And if you get caught doing this, you're done. And that should be the rule. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on in racing that we don't like. But this is, you know, this is cruelty to an animal. And there's just absolutely no place for that. So again, having said that, I do recognize your point, and I think your point is well taken. But at the same time, good for them for going after Mejia and doing it the way they did.
And Bill, I agree with you. I'm glad that somebody finally put their foot down and said, this is not going to be acceptable. And therefore, you're basically, by giving a jockey a 10-year sentence, you're basically giving him a lifetime sentence.
He's done. He might ride in his native Panama again, but he's done in the United States.
He's done for all intents and purposes here. Yeah, exactly. So it definitely was the right decision. And you know, some people have said, you know, on Twitter and in the, you know, Twitter sphere, oh, well, this is what happens when you take whips away. That's BS. It's not because of, you know, you didn't have the whips, so the jockeys needed to have something to encourage, you know, a horse to run. That's a load of crap. That's like saying, well, let's not even have laws against, you know, murdering somebody with a weapon because people are going to do it anyway. It's like, no, you need to have rules and regulations to, you know, that people should abide by. And, you know, certainly taking the whip away is a whole different argument, you know, at Monmouth, but they did it, and they've had a race meet this summer, you know, even though the jockeys didn't have whips. But the battery, you know, the electronic device was not a replacement for the whip. It was not like, oh, I can't whip a horse, so you know, so I'm going to use an electronic prong instead.
As if the jockey's agent was like providing, who's like, hey, there's no whip. Here's your battery.
Here's your standard issue, you know, 9-volt that you can go ahead and use on a horse.
They left us no choice.
Right, exactly. What do you want us to do? That should have been his defense. We don't have a crop to use anymore, yep. So I'm going to use this Duracell. You know, so basically, you know, I'm glad that he was caught. I'm glad that he was suspended, and that the penalty was, you know, was harsh enough where it's going to make other people sit there and say, you know what, maybe this isn't worth it. Maybe I shouldn't do this going forward because I'm going to lose my livelihood if I get caught doing it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and there should be no tolerance for this kind of thing. I completely agree. My only point is that I want this same energy for trainers who get busted. And like I said, you know, Wayne Potts this week, now this wasn't a drug overage. This was kind of, you know, evading the rules of the claiming game in New York, where he claimed a horse and then, or he had Amira Chichakli, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but claimed the horse and then 3 days later transferred it to Wayne Potts because Wayne Potts had already dropped a slip on the horse in the race. You're not allowed to transfer a claimed horse until 30 days, and she did it 3 days later, supposedly, at the request of Wayne Potts. So this wasn't a drug thing, but he's had plenty of drug overages, had plenty of fines and suspensions for that. So where is that kind of energy for the guy who you are celebrating as your leading trainer at Monmouth Park? That's all I want to say, and it's the same thing with Linda Rice in New York. I'm not saying that she didn't deserve the penalty that she got, but where is that same energy for the drug trainers. That's all I want to say.
And Joe, let me just jump in here for a second, because you know the what you know happened with Potts and Ciccolchi, you know, wasn't just well, it was against the rules. It was a freaking IQ test. How stupid do you have to be to claim a horse, get out shook, go to the assistant, go to you know, Gary Contessa's former assistant trainer who took over for, you know, for, you know, for all of his horses when he got out of the business, you know, last time, and basically go to her and say, yeah, we're going to buy that horse from you. And within 72 hours, you know, transfer the horse's papers and move the horse over. I mean, how freaking stupid do you have to be to do that when you know what the rule is? You know, the rule is 30 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, you also know that, hey, I just think that trainers like this, like Wayne Potts, probably say, you know what? They're not going to catch me. Everyone does this. It's no big deal. You know, I'll train for you as a paper trainer. Oh, I got caught. I'll use this drug, you know, 80 something times and got caught. It's, you know, I'll get banned from Maryland. I'll get banned from other racing jurisdictions. But don't worry, New Jersey not only will let me in, but they're going to celebrate me when I get to be the leading trainer. It's just a joke. It's a joke that a guy like that can go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and basically thumb his nose at this point and say, you guys are too stupid to catch me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of trainers who rightfully believe that they're above the law. You know, and that's the impression that I think the industry has given these people for a long, long time. And Wayne Potts is no exception. You know, what like long-term consequences, other than Sal Sinatra kicking his ass out of Maryland, what long-term consequences has he faced for his litany of transgressions, to quote Mad Dog Chris Russo, which is a rap sheet as long as Al Capone's. So what exactly has anything, what repercussions have come to him to make him think, I better change my behavior, otherwise I'm not going to be able to continue doing what I'm doing? None. Next, nope. Less than none. So why wouldn't he think that he can just break any rule he wants?
Not only that, but he's been banned at three different race jurisdictions. So he shows up at Monmouth and does well, and then he's getting more owners to go to New York, and he's actually making more. He's earned more in purses this year than he did in any of the last 4 years.
The system works.
The system works for certain people.
Yep. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
So this weekend, the big day is at Parks. They have four graded stakes, two grade ones, $2 million grade ones, the Pennsylvania Derby for three-year-old males, and then the Cotillion Stakes for three-year-old fillies. Obviously, the big story is Bob Baffert very weirdly scratching Medina Spirit because of the post. But before we get to that, I just want to talk about what a nice field this Pennsylvania Derby is. And, you know, John was just saying off the air how they found like the perfect spot on the calendar for it. I agree. You know, it used to be earlier in September. Now you can get the Travers horses, and now you can get some horses, some three-year-olds who want to use this as their last prep for the Breeders' Cup, you know, rather than run against older horses in the Woodward or the Awesome Again or whatever else is out there right now for going a classic distance. But just look at this field. You know, obviously the headliners are Hot Rod Charlie. You know, I still think ran the best losing race of any three-year-old this year in the Belmont, maybe any three-year-old in several years. And then Midnight Bourbon, who was a very good second in the Travers with a 107 buyer. And even with Medina Spirit out, you got some up-and-coming horses too. This is what I like to see in a three-year-old stake, is establish three-year-olds against up-and-coming three-year-olds, and that makes for a really interesting matchup. And the up-and-comers, I would say, have just as good of a chance as the big guns in here, with Speaker's Corner, who was, you know, one of the most impressive allowance winners in a very crowded field for that category at Saratoga. And Bill Mott pretty much immediately said after his Saratoga allowance win that he was going to point to this race. It's going to be his first two-turn run. He's only been 7 furlongs, but by street sense, out of a Bernardini mare, you'd expect him to be able to go two turns. And a horse that I really like on the outside is American Revolution. Now, he's got a bad post. He's got to get, you know, amazingly, Todd Pleasure didn't scratch him because of the bad post.
Well, now, because now he's moving to the nine hole.
Right.
So the dreaded nine hole.
The cursed nine hole. But American Revolution, who is a constitution for China Horse Club and Windstar Farm, he's developed steadily. He has stayed in New York bred company for all three of his starts this year. But I thought, you know, he was extremely impressive in the Albany Stakes. I would love to see him go a mile and a quarter. Obviously, he's not going to be able to do that unless he runs really well here and that gets a chance to run in the Classic. I think he wants to run all day. But that's just a really solid field of, you know, even like horses like Bourbonic and Keep Me in Mind. You know, they're not superstars, but they've run well in graded stakes as 3-year-olds, and you know, Weyburn's in there as well, Fulsome. It's a very good field and it's a very good day of racing. Now, I personally don't bet Parks because of the high takeout rates. You know, they need to make it a little bit more attractive for me as a player to bet. But as a fan, I'm going to be watching the hell out of that card. But that leads us, I'll let you guys chime in on the race if you'd like to. But that leads us to the main story of the race, which is that Bob Baffert scratched Medina Spirit yesterday, basically with no explanation. He just said he didn't like the post. Let me read the quote to you from Bob Baffert after they drew. So this was after they drew the race. And he said, I quote, they have all the heavyweights right next to each other. He's talking about Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, and Midnight Bourbon. He said, once they draw, we don't worry about it. The break is important no matter what post they have. Now, somehow, in less than 24 hours from that quote, Bob Baffert decided that the nine hole was poison and he could not run Medina Spirit in the race. I will let the audience draw their own conclusions about what the actual reason for scratching may have been. But I just thought that seemed a little ridiculous considering what he said the day before. But nevertheless, Medina Spirit will not run, so you won't get that lightning rod horse in there. But it's obviously still a tremendous field. I wonder what Bill and John have to think about this drama.
Well, it is the story. And isn't Bob Baffert always somehow the story, even when he's not running? You know, what happened here, I don't know. It's not fair to speculate. Do I believe that the horse was scratched because of the post? No, I do not. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, nobody dreads getting the nine post at a mile and eighth to the point where you're going to cancel the plane reservation and keep the horse on the ground in California. And the other thing you didn't mention is the other one, Private Mission, who was his filly entered for the Cotillion. He scratched her as well. I don't think he said one word about why she's out. So Baffert, for whatever reason, decided to pull both his horses out of this race. I have my theories, but, I think it would be a little irresponsible to say them without any proof to back it up. But, if you want to go ahead and use the word fishy, it's fishy.
Definitely.
Yeah. And guys, I got to apologize because when you said, hey, there's a big race at Parks this weekend, I thought you meant the starter allowance for claimer $8,000 running that day. So I did all my homework on the second and third races and couldn't find a Baffert horse in either of the starters.
Hey, is Blue Bluff coming back?
Yeah,
is
exactly. That right? Exactly. But no, they have a – Parks has a great card that day. It is very, interesting as far as the PA Derby entries go. Top to bottom, Joe, like you said, it's just a bunch of really great horses. Some horses that are already proven, some horses that are up and coming. We kind of glossed over Keep Me in Mind, who I think is probably in history the world's greatest A other than.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a horse who broke his maiden in a grade two and has made $750,000. And that's the only race he's won so far because he's just run against Essential Quality, Midnight Bourbon, King Fury, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie. I mean, all of these great horses. And he's 8-1 in this race. That's how tough of a race it
is. Exactly.
It's going to be a great watching race. It's whether you gamble or not, it's going to be a must see TV for the up and coming Breeders' Cup Classic that'll be in California later on in November. But it's just highly suspicious that the Baffert gang decided to scratch not one but both of their horses in these $1 million races. Is it a ploy where, hey, I think maybe the races are too tough and I don't want to admit that? I don't know. Is it that, maybe from a from a transfer standpoint. They weren't sure they were going to get the horses in there to parks on time, and they were worried about the horses coming in from the West Coast. Maybe. Is it really that they were in the nine and you know, post and that, you know, he was worried about the quick turn into the, you know, to the first, the short distance into the quick turn into parks? I don't know. He's won a lot of races at parks over the years. I can't imagine that that would be it. So, you know, questions are abound as far as why, you know, why they decided to scratch Medina Spirit. You know, he very easily could have said a number of reasons that would have been, in my estimation, less suspicious. Right. He could have said the horse came out of the barn a little gimpy today, and I just want to give it a little time. I'm not pleased. I don't want to send the horse all the way cross country and then have to send them back, because the ultimate goal is to run in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is here in California. You know, there's a host of reasons why. I will let the internet and Twitter, you know, come up with all the reasons why they think it is. And I'm leaning towards some of those, you know, recommendations and suggestions, quite frankly.
Yeah, this is one of those scenarios where I think racing Twitter probably has it pegged much closer than the official explanation, which, like I said, was, you know, very, very weird considering he said the day before, I don't care about the post. He essentially said the opposite the day before. And then he was like, oh, wait, you said the nine post. Oh, nine. Right. I didn't think we were all the way out there. But, yeah, you know, it's still going to be a great race. And, yeah, Bob Effort makes himself the story somehow. And Medina Spirit is just like one of those horses, like Maximum Security, that's just always in the news for the wrong reasons. But nevertheless, it's going to be a great card. I misspoke before. There's five graded stakes. I forgot about the mile and a half Greenwood Cup. So we got the PA Derby, the Cotillion, the Gallant Bob. You know, shout out to Steve Asmussen and Kirk Robinson and Judy Robinson for running Jackie's Warrior. Like, I, you know, that's not a race that they necessarily had to run him in. They could run the Vosburg or, and, you know, the old ancient title at Santa Anita, but they're running him in the Gallant Bob. He's going to be a huge, huge favorite. But so they gave an extra little pop to that undercard by running him, because he's appointment viewing.
How would you love to say, okay, I'm going to push my sprinter, point my twinter, my sprinter for the Gallant Bob, and then entries come out and you're like, oh crap, Jackie's Warriors.
Hey man, second still pays okay. That's what I always say. Don't be afraid to run. Second still pays pretty well. So then we got that, and then the Turf Monster Stakes and the Greenwood Cup. So Parks will get the spotlight this week. I just wanted to transition from that, you know, now after we're done frying Bob Baffert for his frankly implausible, to me at least, explanation for scratching Medina Spirit. Bill had a good column on Sunday in his Week in Review where he, you know, there's this question now where the Breeders' Cup is kind of debating, it's, I guess, behind closed doors about whether or not to let Bob Baffert's horses run in the Breeders' Cup. Now, I have spent plenty of time filleting Bob Baffert this year for his transgressions and for the embarrassment that he's put racing through and for how careless he is and for how racing has let him off the hook so many times that something like the Medina Spirit DQ in the Derby was bound to happen. But I found Bill's story very persuasive in that, you know, I don't know what grounds the Breeders' Cup and Del Mar have to not let him run. And Bill also talked about how the owners, you know, it's a bad position to put the owners in. And you can say what you want about the owners that still support Bob Baffert, but 7 weeks out of the Breeders' Cup, you can't say to them, or maybe even less than 7 weeks by the time they make a decision, say, oh yeah, you got to put your horses in another trainer's barn and basically restart the training with a new trainer. And that made a lot of sense to me. I just think, you know, especially with all the legal challenges that were going on with Naira, and then you would think eventually in Kentucky with Baffert and his lawyers, it would be opening up a can of worms that you really do not want to open if you're the Breeders' Cup and you banned them at this late date. But I'll let Bill expand on it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I want to have it both ways after joining in the chorus of oh boy, this thing doesn't pass the smell test at Parks. But so the Breeders' Cup has come out basically saying, you know, we're looking into Baffert. You know, we'll have investigation, et cetera. And at the end of the day, we'll decide whether he can run in the Breeders' Cup or not. And again, Joe, you know, I hesitate to say this because I don't want to be a Baffert apologist, but you got to let him run in the Breeders' Cup. And you mentioned, first of all, the practicality of, as you said, less than 7 weeks before the event, you can tell these owners, you can't use your trainer. If you were going to suspend him and keep him out of the Breeders' Cup, you should have done it in May when the Medina Spirit stuff first surfaced. That's when both Naira and Churchill Downs suspended him. You know, what new has happened since then? Absolutely nothing. Matter of fact, that nothing has happened is in his favor because he hasn't had any more transgressions, et cetera. That's number one. Number two, if you ban him, how hard is it going to be for his lawyers to go to some court, get an injunction, and just, you know, delay the process, and he's going to run anyways? Okay, those are the practical matters. But at some point, I do think the punishment and the crime are not in sync anymore. If somebody robs a bank in this country, what do they get, 5 years in prison, 10 years in prison? You don't give them the death penalty. You don't give them life in prison. For what he did, which, you know, it stinks to high heaven. It's been terrible for the game. But all you have him on is a bunch of overages of therapeutic medications. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done a better job. But is that really worth just destroying everything in his path? He can't run in the Kentucky Derby next year. Naira's trying to keep him out of all their races. Now, 7 weeks, 6.5 weeks, 6 weeks before the Breeders' Cup, you're going to tell him he can't run in it. I think at some point, enough is enough. I mean, he's been punished severely as it is. Let's get through this and move on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I don't think that this is the death penalty if he can't run in this year's Breeders' Cup. I think he'll survive. I do agree that the time to do this, if you were the Breeders' Cup, was when the Medina Spirit thing came out. You can't wait months and months and months and then say you're deliberating in September about whether or not you're going to let this high-profile trainer run in your event 6 weeks from now. It just logistically does not make a lot of sense. It's not fair to the owners. And, you know, frankly, the fans want to see Bob Baffert's horses in the Breeders' Cup. Like, let's be real. You know, I think we're all very mad at him and, you know, for the Derby stuff and think that, you know, he flouts the rules a lot. But at the end of the day, he has high profile, big drawing horses, and it behooves the Breeders' Cup and Del Mar to have those horses running on those 2 days, mostly probably on Saturday. And then you can deal with the fallout, you know, whatever it may be later on. I think that I do agree with Bill that the main punishment that he has now is that he can't theoretically run in the Derby the next 2 years, because that's his claim to fame. And that's the main reason he gets all of the high price stock that he does, is because he's thought of as this Derby master. And it doesn't make sense to try to ban him now from the Breeders' Cup with that hanging over him and with so little time between now and the event. I actually agree with Bill. So it can be both ways. You can be, you know, angry and suspicious and, you know, think that Bob Baffert overall is not good for the game, which I wholly feel, especially after the past year. But you can also realize that it wouldn't be fair to him or to his clients to exclude him from the Breeders' Cup right now. But I am interested, and this came out yesterday, that his lawyer is going to sue Naira. I mean, it's so hard to keep track of the Craig Robinson and the Naira and the motions and this and that, but to hold the Naira in contempt for trying to schedule these hearings and file charges officially against Bob Baffert. I think that you know, Craig Robinson had a good quote where he said that, you know, they're trying to retroactively create this process that they should have had initially in place when the stuff with the Medina Spirit came down, where they would have scheduled a hearing and issued charges and let him have his day in court. Seems like they're kind of trying to do it after the fact now. So I think that, you know, not being a lawyer, the Baffert team is going to win out in that regard. So it seems like at the end of the day, only the Churchill thing, only the Derby thing might hold up. But, you know, like I said, being such a prominent 2-year-old and 3-year-old trainer, that may be enough. You know, that may be that punishment may fit the crime. But, you know, it's just funny. It's just funny that Bill wrote that story. And then 2 days later, he comes out with the very, very suspicious scratch of Medina Spirit, because he just can't help himself. There's always something with Baffert. But it's a good story by Bill. And I appreciate his arguments. And I think at the end of the day, like I said, people want to see Baffert's horses on that big stage at the Breeders' Cup. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. And it was a big day earlier this week for Legacy when they sold a City of Light colt, we talked about him before, for $710,000 to Mayberry Farm. Very well done, Tommy and Wendy. Congratulations to you guys. And they'll be offering their yearling selling on Thursday and Friday out of Barn 33. So if you're on the grounds and you want to go check them out, go see their consignment. Sire Power includes First Crop Stallions Accelerate, Motown, and Taprit, plus yearlings by Practical Joke, Midnight Loot, and more. And I know John has a couple of notes on a legacy consignment.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a consigner and you say, what are the benchmarks? What are the points that you want to, you know, look for when you look for a consigner? And I can tell you as a buyer, what I'm looking for is that the horses look like they're in good flesh. They look like they're, you know, in good form, and that they look like they can continue to move up the ladder and improve. And I'm not the only one to say that. I mean, you know, you say it when you put your hand up and you start bidding on horses. But listen to these programs I bought from Legacy: Mayberry Farm, Winchell Thoroughbreds, Ralph Nix, John Oxley, Liz Crow, King's Equine, you know, Christina Gem. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So that was an important thing. And from a seller standpoint, if I was, you know, for when I look to sell horses, I look at what the strike rate is, meaning what's the percentage of horses that they sold. And, you know, guys, if I told you that the average industry strike rate is about 2/3, you want to sell about 67% of the horses that come through your consignment. Legacy Bloodstock so far to date at the Keeneland September sale is at 90%. They sold 90% of their horses to the public. And even more impressive than that, only one of them was a private sale afterwards. So they are recognizing what the market, you know, what the value of the horses are. The marketplace is taking those horses and running with it. And that's just an outstanding, outstanding percentage. When you get a 90% strike rate, that's almost unheard of.
Yeah, and well, that makes everybody look good. It makes the sellers look good. It makes the sale look good. So yeah, very, very, very good to accurately price your horses. And, you know, they obviously had a very successful sale. And $710,000. That's a big time score. So congratulations to you guys for sure. We'll be right back after this message from Legacy Bloodstock.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up and down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So our Green Group Guest of the Week this week is the trainer of the highly impressive filly Hidden Connection, who blew away her rivals in the Pocahontas over the weekend, Brett Calhoun. Thanks so much for coming on, Brett.
Good morning.
So it's good to talk to you. Obviously, that was an incredibly impressive performance. I just always like to get this perspective from trainers when a horse runs off the screen like that. I assume you were expecting her to run well, but not quite that well. Can you talk about your impressions both in real time and now about that performance?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, obviously, you know, trainers, we've got a million excuses. We've got always nervous. We don't have them quite like we want them. You know, nothing rarely goes perfect, but this is a filly that showed a lot of talent early on. She breaks her maiden impressively, very easily. But we've got basically 30 days from a 5.5 maiden race at Colonial to come to the Pocahontas at a mile 16th. So there wasn't a lot of time to prepare like I wanted. So she always looked like she wanted to go two turns in the morning. But until you do it with very little experience, one race, you know, 5.5, one race, not a lot of experience, and then stretching the two turns in a graded stakes. It's a lot to ask. With that being said, I did have a lot of confidence in her going in. I really felt like she would run really, really well that night, and I thought she would really get a good position in the first turn. And, you know, we really thought she wanted to go on. But like I said, until they prove it, you're not for sure.
Hey, Brett, thanks for joining us. And give us the backstory on how this horse was acquired. We know the horse was bought at Ocala sale for $85,000 by a first-year sire that only stands for, I believe, $15,000. $85,000 in this day and age is just a ham sandwich for a horse, especially one that turns out to be as good as this one. Who found this horse, and how did they were able to find a horse that has such star power, potential star power, for such a moderate price?
Yeah, Dan Hall and his team from Hidden Brook found this filly at OBS June. I didn't know anything about it at the time. They just called me after they purchased her and asked me if I would be interested in training her. And I said, yes, send her on. So she showed my barn, and it took me a couple of weeks to figure out who she was. And what I mean by that is I was at the April sale, and I shortlisted this filly with Josh Stevens and I, and we were looking for a little less expensive filly for a guy that we'd already spent some money for, and we didn't have much left. And so she kind of looked like she would fall into that budget. Well, she was RNA'd that day for $55,000. And I talked to the consigner a little bit afterwards to see what they would take for her, and it just didn't work out for us. And I forgot about her and went on. And after she was in the barn for a little while, I started putting it all together. And the guy, the consigner, reminded me that was the filly that we came to him afterwards to purchase. So maybe it was just fate for me to get her, but kudos for Dan Hall and his team from Hiddenbrook to select this filly, and we've been very fortunate how she's turned out.
And Brett, you know, you're being modest, because the filly ran such a huge race, and not only had to overcome some of the things you mentioned, like first time two turns, first time grade three, but also it was nighttime racing. There was a huge crowd there, and I know that they let a lot more people into the paddock than over the past couple of weeks. So, and there were so many people there, so much so that I think a filly actually flipped in the paddock and scratched, because of it. So there was a lot of action, a lot of tension, a lot of pressure going on, and she just handled it like it was nobody, like it was another day at the office. I mean, give us an idea of what she's like mentally, because obviously we know what she's like physically. She's a freak.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That was some of the things that kept me from being super confident. You know, I felt like she would run well, but I knew we had a lot of obstacles to overcome. The night racing, the atmosphere that night was like a rock concert. I mean, there were so many people in the paddock and so many people surrounding the paddock. It was a difficult situation for any horse and very difficult for an inexperienced two-year-old. So that was a big concern of mine. The one filly got a little unnerved and flipped, and she kind of landed kind of close to my stall, and I thought my filly was going to get a little unnerved. My filly's got a good mind on her, but she is a little high strung, and she handled everything as good or better than I thought she would. And I knew once she got on a racetrack we'd be fine, but just trying to get out of the paddock was a big concern of mine. Once I got her in the stall and packed her up, I just left her there. I didn't even get her out and walk her around the ring because there's just so many people, and I was afraid it was going to unnerve her a little bit. I did have cotton stuffed in her ears to kind of muffle it a little bit, and she has been training with that and has raced with that, and I think that was helpful for her as well. She handled everything, like I said, as good or better than I could ever expected. We had schooled her a couple of times, but there's no way you can prepare them for something like that.
Yeah, I wanted to turn the page just a little bit and talk about, you know, last couple of years you've had a really good, a really successful partnership with Chester Thomas from Allied Racing Stables. You had Mr. Money, By My Standards has really become a very nice horse for you guys. Can you just talk about that relationship and how that's come about and how important it's been to your career in the last couple of years?
Well, Chester came along at a time that I didn't have a lot of good horses in the barn, and he brought me some really good prospects that turned out to be top race horses. We've had a phenomenal run for the last 3 years. It's almost a fairy tale, unbelievable run. We've had one good horse after another, and the ones that weren't top horses have been very useful horses. So it's just been really good for the both of us, and we've just had a really extremely good run for the last few years.
Hey, Brett, I also want to change the subject a little bit. A couple of weeks ago on the show, we had a trainer, Phil Serpy, after he won the Queen's Plate up at Woodbine, kind of, I guess complaining is the right word, about how difficult it was for some of the smaller trainers, a guy who would only, I think it was only his fourth win of the year. You don't have quite the numbers that a Brad Cox or Chad Brown has, but you're knocking on the door to be called kind of one of those super trainers with the amount of success you'd had and the numbers you had. You know, what's your take on this situation where the big stables are so dominant in the game this day and age? And in some respects, would you admit that it's not great for racing?
Yeah, I do think it's tough for the business in general, and the fact that we need more entries obviously is proven for the handle that the bigger field size is better for the handle. So I get that. So I don't know how you get around that. You know, I think 20 years ago, 50 horses was a large stable. Now I think my stable now is fluctuate around 100 or so. That doesn't seem so large of a stable compared to some of these outfits that have 300 and 400. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for them to have that many. I just think or me to have the 100. I just think it's difficult for the different racetracks to have enough entries, you know, when they all have several of the same horses for that particular race, instead of, you know, two or three other trainers having those horses. But that's just the way the business has gone this time. And the guys that are in that position, they've earned it. They've become top trainers and they've had the results. And so they deserve the position they're in. So I really don't have the answers for this. And obviously not very many other people have the answers. How do you correct something like this or change it? But, you know, that's just kind of been the way it's gone the last several years.
Brett, let me shift gears for you for a second, because one of the things that I've been impressed by your training ability is that you've found unearthed horses at sales that are by less popular stallions or by stallions that are inexpensive. And, you know, Bill mentioned the filly that you just won with, who's Connect, who's a $15,000 stallion. You know, you had Dubai Majesty, who was an Essence of Dubai, daughter. And then you've been the king of Golden Sense almost since the horse has been throwing runners. Whenever there's a good Golden Sense, we automatically assume that Brett Calhoun is associated with it somehow. What's been the key to you finding these lesser known or less expensive horses that you continue to win graded stake races with?
I don't know if there's been a key to finding those kind of horses, but that's the kind of budget that a lot of my clientele has had. So that's what we've had to work with. And I'm pretty proud of our team for what we've been able to accomplish with what we have had. We don't have a lot of high profile horses in the barn. We might get one or two of those a year or every once in a while. Most of our horses are from more humble beginnings, like you said, and we've been fortunate enough to develop a few and really do well with some. So we just keep grinding it out and try to do the best with what we've got.
And Brett, one last question for me, and that is, you know, you've been a very consistent 18, 19, 20% win percentage guy. You have 3,300 wins and your horses have earned $93 million in purse earnings. At this rate, you're probably going to have $100 million in purse earnings sometime in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months. Have you thought about what that means as far as your career when you look back on it?
Yeah, it's an incredible, you know, for me, it's an unbelievable number. And then you look at some other guys that's got, you know, a whole lot more than that. But for me, it's been an unbelievable run to have 3,300 wins. You know, I'm hoping to reach 4,000 and to 100 million in earnings. I love this sport, love the horses, love the game, and it's provided a good living for me. So I can't say enough about the business and what it's done for me. And it's just, you know, a lot of people have to go to a job every day they can't stand. I go to a job every day that I love. You know, there's obviously, it gets more complicated every year, and there's a lot more hoops to jump through, and it's very difficult to manage everything at this point in time. I say this a little bit, just kind of a little funny, but you know, I think in the early years it was a lot of fun, and it's sure enough a business now for sure. Not that I don't still love it, but it's definitely changed a lot.
Hey, Brett, before we let you go, one last question. I'm going to get back to Hidden Connection. The jockey, Relu Gutierrez, has obviously done everything right with this horse with two blowout wins. But for any trainer that has a horse of this ability with the Breeders' Cup coming up, there must be some temptation to go for a better-known jockey, a Luis Saez, one of the Ortiz brothers, et cetera. Is Relu going to ride in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies?
Yes, he will. You know, I've never wavered or hesitated about putting Relu back on this horse. And putting him in a race like that and going forward as well. I have a lot of confidence in him. He doesn't seem to get rattled. I don't think pressure situations like that are going to bother him any. He's an up-and-coming rider. And, you know, my owners backed me on this situation. They asked me what I was going to do. I told them my plans unless they were opposed to it. And had a problem with it, and they were all on board, and I think they still are today. And I sure am. I have a lot of confidence in Rank.
I mean, that's, we love to hear that. We love to hear that, that kind of loyalty. Actually, I have one more question. I remember you as being a Chicago Arlington regular not too long ago. I used to saddle a lot more horses there. Unfortunately, this is the closing weekend at Arlington coming up. I think most people are pretty sad about that. Can you just talk to, I believe your first graded stakes win was there, if I'm not mistaken. Can you just talk about your connection to Arlington and just your feelings on it shutting down this weekend?
You know, honestly, it was one of my favorite places to go in the summer. I absolutely love going to Arlington Park, and I'm not alone in that comment. I would have rather gone up there and trained up there and stabled up there in the summer than just about any place in the country. So, yeah, it's disappointing we're going to lose another major track and a gorgeous facility. Very disappointing. You know, that's kind of how this world is, and the game is obviously changing a lot, and we're losing some racetracks here and there, and that's definitely one that's going to be missed for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to end the interview on a sour note, because you should be very excited about Hidden Connection and the Breeders' Cup coming up. Brett, thank you so much for coming on with us. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett.
All right, good to talk to you, Brett.
Good luck, Brett. Thank you.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Brett Calhoun will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The World's Yearling Sale. Make plans for the Keeneland September Yearling Sale September 13th through the 24th. Visit theworldsyearlingsale.com to learn more.
I like that shirt, by the way.
Thank you.
I thought I was the only one with Expos gear.
Oh, I love the Expos.
I'm wearing...
What was up with the ugly uniforms of the Red Sox last night?
So,
those were awful.
Well, earlier so in the season, they did these, the City Connect. It was not just them. Right. You would have uniforms that had something to do with your city, and the blue and gold is the Boston Marathon.
Boston Marathon, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they brought them back out of the blue, and right. They won three straight, so they're not taking them off.
Oh, my God, they're so ugly.
They're awful. Yeah.
I think they won four straight. Whatever. I mean, they're not – they don't come off until they lose a game.
Right. So. Yeah. No, they're hideous, though.
They're winning.
I know they're winning.
Yes.
At what cost?
Exactly. And they're only beating the Mets. It's not like, you know.
God, the Mets are pathetic. Yeah,
they are. Man. Terrible.
This could have been a good year for them.
They ruined players.
Yeah. Well, I thought as soon as DeGrom came up with any arm soreness, I was like, you got to shut him down. And they kept pitching him through it.
Of course.
And lo and behold. Mets. Yeah.
Because they're my team. That's why.
Well, don't worry. I was at the Jets home opener on Sunday, so that was a lot of fun.
I wasn't going
to
say
that anything. Was great. Baking in the sun to watch Zach throw four picks against the Patriots. Yeah. That was fun.
I love how at halftime they said he's got more receptions by the Patriots than he does by his own players.
Yeah. Wasn't
four
great.
Interceptions and three completions.
Wasn't great, but also not all that surprising. Listen, I still think he's going to be really good, but... That was not fun. I mean, tailgating and shit was fun, but once the game started, it went downhill.
Exactly.
We'll see.
They did say that in Aikman's first start, he had five interceptions.
But I hate when everybody says that. They're always like, well, Peyton Manning threw 30 interceptions. Yeah. Okay, he's the anomaly. Most guys that throw 30 picks their rookie year end up being terrible.
Yeah, end up working at Arby's. Exactly.
I heard that when Sanchez was around. They were like, well, Peyton threw 30 picks. Okay, let's pick the one Hall of Famer that was terrible his rookie year.
Yep. Anyway. That's the positive spin. You don't have to worry about it unless Salas gets a tattoo of that was perfect. That was absolutely
is that on
perfect.
From the board?
Yeah. Was that by accident? That was perfect. That was golden.
So we have some announcements, some very exciting announcements for our TDN Writers Room family this week. The first one is that two of our editors, Anthony and Aaliyah LaRocca, who are married and who we love very dearly, had their first child, Paisley Mae LaRocca, last week. I'm sure we're putting a photo up right now of a very, very cute baby who, I don't know if Patty's putting up the same photo, but she said he was making she's making the same face that that Anthony makes when Patty asks him to do an edit.
It's like, it was very funny.
It was absolutely perfect. But, you know, we could not be happier for Anthony and Aaliyah. They are great, great people. And, bred to be a rising star editor. That's what I'll say. Paisley's bred to be a great, great editor. So we're very happy for you guys. And let me just... Oh,
wrong one.
I hit the rim shot. There we go. Yeah.
Very happy for them. Mazel tov.
Yeah, I was so used to hitting the rim shot for John's jokes. I accidentally hit that. But no, we're so happy for you guys. And also, our associate producer, who also just got married, Katie Petruniak. It's her birthday today. She is obnoxiously 24 years old today, which makes me feel old just saying, but we're super happy for Katie as well. Let me just see if I can hit the right one this time. There we go. There's the applause. Yay. So a happy birthday to Katie and major, major congratulations to Anthony and Aaliyah on baby Paisley. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. Reminder, Keeneland September yearling sale is still going on through Friday. You can find out more and see the catalog at theworldsyearlingsale.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Brett Calhoun, our producer, Patty Wolf, our birthday girl, the associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our new parents, Anthony LaRocca and Aaliyah LaRocca, as well as Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you next week.